Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we take a stack of sources and extract the most important nuggets of knowledge and insight, custom tailored just for you. Today, we're embarking on a deep dive into an issue of significant contemporary relevance drawn from the pages of Time Magazine, August 18th, 2025.
Okay.
I'm Andy Byron, your guide into today's complex topic. And joining me, as always, is our insightful expert, Chris Cabot.
It's a real pleasure to be here for this exploration. The central focus of our discussion today is the primary article in this issue titled How Mike Johnson Became Trump's Speaker. And this piece offers a truly fascinating look into the inner workings of Washington.
Absolutely. And our mission for this deep dive is to unpack the intricate political maneuvering, the surprising alliances, and the profound policy shifts that have come to define Speaker Mike Johnson's leadership under a new Trump presidency. We're going to be delving into the specifics of how he managed to shepherd critical and often highly controversial legislation through a pretty fractured Congress, and what those actions really mean for the future of American governance and maybe the balance of power.
Yeah, it's a big topic.
So let's get right into the heart of this. The article itself, How Mike Johnson Became Trump's Speaker, immediately signals its depth through its authors.
Right.
It's penned by Cortalesa and Popley, both seasoned correspondents at Time's Washington, D.C. bureau. Yeah. They've got extensive experience covering Congress, Donald Trump, national politics.
They really know the beat.
Exactly. And what stands out to me is that Popley was even selected for the National Press Foundation's Paul Miller Washington Reporting Fellowship in 2025.
Yeah.
That really gives you a sense of the caliber of reporting, the deep access that informs this piece.
It does. It tells you this isn't just surface-level analysis. It's coming from journalists with a real pulse on Capitol Hill.
Mm.
And that background immediately sets a certain expectation for the insights we're about to uncover.
Mm.
What's truly fascinating here, and what anchors the entire narrative, I think, is how the article opens. It's such a specific, almost theatrical anecdote.
Mm-hmm.
It's late May, and we find Donald Trump in Speaker Johnson's office. Trump, visibly frustrated. He perceives House Republicans as hindering his one big, beautiful bill,
right?
And he directly challenges Johnson, asking, "Don't you ever want revenge?"
Wow. That's such a striking opening, isn't it?
It really is. And that question coming from Trump is just laden with expectation. It's almost a demand for absolute loyalty, a shared sense of grievance.
It instantly spotlights this core tension in their relationship. Trump is essentially venting, expecting Johnson to echo his aggressive, retaliatory style. But Johnson's response completely shifts the dynamic.
Completely. He explains that seeking vengeance cuts against his Christian faith.
And the article describes Trump giving him a stone-faced look, which, I imagine is quite intimidating.
Oh, absolutely. But Johnson, ever the pragmatist, adds that with such a narrow majority in the House, they simply don't have the luxury for vendettas.
So what does that exchange immediately reveal about Johnson's political calculus? How is it different from what we might expect from a speaker operating in Trump's orbit?
Well, it's a crucial insight, I think, because it shows Johnson isn't just a blind loyalist or, a figurehead. He's operating with this unique blend of personal conviction and strategic pragmatism. He seems to understand that absolute, unyielding loyalty to Trump might be politically useful in the short term, giving him favor with the president, but it could hamstring his ability to actually govern effectively with that narrow, often fractured majority.
So his faith isn't just personal, it's strategic.
It seems that way. It provides him a shield, maybe a moral boundary, that also serves as a kind of strategic negotiating point with Trump. It allows him to subtly maintain some independence while still, largely aligning with the agenda. The core insight here is that Johnson's faith isn't just a personal belief. It's a key element of his political strategy.
Uh-huh.
And that really differentiates him from past Trump allies who often just mirrored the president's confrontational style. It foreshadows this dynamic of strategic cooperation, but one where Johnson asserts, a certain degree of his own terms.
And speaking of asserting his own terms, Johnson's rise to the speakership itself was pretty unexpected, wasn't it?
Oh, completely unexpected. He assumed the role in October 2023, seemingly emerging from relative obscurity after that chaotic period in the House.
You have former Republican Speaker John Boehner famously calling it the toughest job in America.
Which sounds about right.
And when you look at the context, you can absolutely see why. You're tasked with managing a conference that has been notoriously ungovernable for years, constantly pulling in different directions.
Mm-hmm.
While simultaneously trying to satisfy a president who expects, as Boehner put it, total obeisance and has a history of, quickly turning on congressional leaders who don't deliver exactly what he wants.
The minefield. So what did this unexpected ascent signal about Johnson, and what were the initial perceptions of him in Washington? Well, what's fascinating here is that the initial expectations for Johnson in Washington were, frankly, remarkably low.
Really?
Yeah. Many didn't think he'd last. They predicted he'd be another short-lived speaker in a succession of them. Yet, as the article points out, he has largely defied those expectations, at least so far. His unexpected ascent, emerging from what many considered the backbenches, it suggests he possesses a truly unique skill set, one necessary for navigating today's highly fractured Republican Party.
Especially given the difficulties his predecessors faced.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Considering the public and often painful difficulties his predecessors, like Kevin McCarthy, faced in just holding the conference together, Johnson's success hints at a leadership style that prioritizes patience, quiet negotiation, consensus building within his own ranks over outright confrontation.
So less fireworks, more groundwork.
Precisely. This emphasizes the sheer difficulty of the role and how Johnson's initial perception as a low-profile, relatively unknown figure has been, well, proven wrong by his legislative successes. It suggests he had a quality that others lacked, perhaps a non-threatening demeanor combined with a deep understanding of his conference's inner workings.
So he steps into what's effectively described as the toughest job in America and manages to exceed those incredibly low expectations, particularly in delivering for the White House. This brings us directly to his legislative wins since Trump's inauguration, which is really where his effectiveness starts to become undeniable, according to this article.
Indeed. The article meticulously lists a series of Johnson's legislative successes that directly advance Trump's agenda, showcasing a rapid and significant shift from previous congressional dynamics. For example, almost immediately, he thwarted a vote aimed at blocking Trump's sweeping tariffs.
And these aren't minor tweaks.
Not at all. These tariffs represent a core protectionist measure central to Trump's America First economic policy. It signals a radical departure from, you know, decades of free trade consensus. Johnson's ability to prevent a vote on blocking them immediately demonstrated his alignment and effectiveness in a critical, high-stakes area of economic policy.
A clear signal to Trump.
Exactly. A signal that Johnson understood his priorities and could execute them.
And it wasn't just about economic policy, right? He also successfully passed the Laken Riley Act.
Yes, which aims to expedite the deportation of arrested migrants.
This bill is far more than just a legislative achievement. It's a cornerstone of Trump's immigration policy, a central and, frankly, emotionally charged promise he made repeatedly to his base. What does pushing through a bill like this so quickly tell us about Johnson's strategic understanding of Trump's core promises and his ability to translate them into legislative action?
That's a crucial point, because the Laken Riley Act wasn't just policy. It was deeply symbolic for Trump's base. It addressed a visceral concern about border security and immigration enforcement. Johnson prioritizing and passing this early on tells us that he clearly understands the political and emotional resonance of these issues for Trump and his supporters.
He gets the message.
He gets the message. It's a demonstration of his capacity to deliver on those high visibility promises, solidifying his loyalty in the eyes of the president and his most ardent followers. Furthermore, what's also notable is Johnson's ability to avert a government shutdown,
which has tripped up so many speakers before him.
Right. It's been a consistent point of contention, a major challenge, often leading to stalemates, public outcry, and significant political damage. Johnson's success here demonstrates his capacity to maintain functional governance and avoid the kind of chaotic brinkmanship that previously plagued the House. It reflects a certain shrewdness in managing his caucus, finding common ground, even if temporary, to avoid larger political fallout.
And then there's the delivery of pro-crypto legislation. Mm-hmm. This bill blesses certain digital assets tied to the U.S. dollar, essentially creating a framework that appeals to a growing and increasingly influential tech bro constituency.
Right.
This isn't a traditional Republican issue, is it?
Yeah.
So what's the significance of Johnson pushing this particular legislation through?
That's a fantastic observation, because it demonstrates Johnson's strategic breadth. His willingness to embrace emerging issues that align with a new, powerful segment of the conservative base. The tech bro constituency, often characterized by its libertarian leanings and, let's face it, significant financial resources, has been actively seeking regulatory clarity and favorable conditions for digital assets.
So this builds a bridge.
Exactly. By passing legislation that blesses certain digital assets tied to the U.S. dollar, Johnson is effectively solidifying a new alliance, bringing a powerful and well-funded group into the Republican fold. This isn't just about policy, it's about expanding the party's appeal and leveraging new economic forces. Collectively, these early successes, from tariffs and immigration to avoiding shutdowns and embracing crypto, truly established Johnson as a highly effective legislative operator for Trump. This contrasts sharply with the challenges Trump faced with previous speakers and highlights a significant shift towards a more unified and, frankly, more effective legislative executive branch.
One that's robustly pushing through a specific policy agenda that clearly bears Trump's stamp.
No question.
But the real testament to his legislative prowess, according to the article, was what they dubbed the One Big Beautiful Bill. This was on an entirely different scale from those earlier wins.
Oh, absolutely. This bill was an entirely different beast. We're talking nearly $4
trillion. $4
trillion. It was designed as a huge supply-side bet, aiming to stimulate economic growth, primarily by lowering taxes for corporations and wealthy individuals. The theory being, you know, the benefits would trickle down.
The classic trickle-down theory.
Right. But the scale of its controversial provisions is what truly makes it stand out. For instance, it included dramatic cuts in basic services for the poor, specifically slashing support for states' Medicaid programs and federal food stamp benefits, programs millions of vulnerable Americans rely on.
And the human impact here is staggering, isn't it? The article states it enforced work requirements that, based on estimates, could strip healthcare coverage from an estimated 11.8 million people.
11.8 million. That's a huge number.
On top of that, it allocated a massive $170 billion to complete the southern border wall, a central Trump promise for years, and to turbocharge his administration's deportation operations.
It's not just policy tweaks. It's a fundamental restructuring of government priorities.
Absolutely. And the economic projections for this bill were equally stark, weren't they?
They were. The Congressional Budget Office, the CBO Congress's nonpartisan scorekeeper, estimated that the One Big Beautiful Bill Act would add $3.4 trillion or more to the national debt over the next decade.
Trillion with a T.
Exactly. And this goes directly against Johnson's own public arguments that the bill would do the opposite, that economic growth would reduce the debt.
And public opinion wasn't exactly cheering it on either.
Not at all. Polls showed more than half of Americans opposed it weeks before the vote. So the big question is, how did Johnson, facing such massive opposition and these serious economic concerns, manage to get this colossal bill through?
This is where Johnson's strategic acumen really shines through, and the article details his very methodical step-by-step approach. He tells Time on July 8 from his Capitol office that his strategy involved quiet, behind-the-scenes negotiations with competing House factions. It required what he candidly called a high-stakes roll of the dice on the House floor, and, crucially, leveraging Trump's immense popularity and influence to pressure dissenters within his own party.
That Trump factor is key.
Indispensable, it seems. Vice President J.D. Vance even called its passage a defining moment of his speakership, which really underscores its significance within the administration. This section thoroughly explores the bill's profound economic and social impact, highlighting the deep ideological divide it represents. But more importantly, it showcases Johnson's strategic ability to pass highly controversial legislation against significant opposition.
Right. It demonstrates a new and incredibly effective model of Republican leadership, one that is deeply intertwined with the executive branch, almost acting as its legislative arm.
And this brings us to a really crucial point the article makes about the new dynamic between Congress and the presidency. Johnson isn't your typical speaker, right?
Not at all. He's not like the pugilistic Newt Gingrich who thrived on confrontation, or an iron-fisted vote counter like Nancy Pelosi, known for her tight grip on her caucus and her, well, independent power. Johnson sees his role quite differently.
That's right. As Johnson sees it, Trump won the presidency with a clear mandate to fundamentally reshape government. And Johnson's explicit role is to execute that vision.
He's the implementer.
Exactly. He views himself not as an independent power broker, a co-equal branch in the traditional sense, but rather as the instrument of the president's agenda, the legislative arm of the White House. Johnson's quote really drives this home. "We are a well-oiled machine now," he says.
Wow.
Describing it as a very different dynamic than what took place in the first term of the Trump presidency.
That statement itself marks a significant departure from traditional congressional independence, doesn't it? Where the legislative branch often serves as a check on executive power.
It raises huge questions about the separation of powers, the evolving role of Congress. How much constitutional authority does it maintain when aligned so closely with the White House?
It suggests a shift from legislative checks to, well, legislative facilitation.
And naturally, this dynamic, this shift in the balance of power, isn't without its critics.
Of course not. Democratic Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, for instance, is quoted asking pointedly, is he a rubber stamp or Speaker of the House?
That question cuts right to the heart of the concerns many have. These criticisms provide a crucial counter-narrative to the perception of Johnson's success. Opponents specifically accuse Johnson of effectively handing Congress's constitutional authority powers, like imposing tariffs or approving acts of war, directly to the White House,
instead of upholding the legislative branch's role as separate and co-equal.
Right. The article also points to instances where Johnson appeared to look the other way. For example, when Trump ignored the law, Congress passed banning TikTok in the U.S., a significant legislative action Johnson didn't publicly push back.
Interesting.
And there's the interesting detail about Johnson sending members home early to defuse a looming fight over releasing Jeffrey Epstein files. Specifically because of Epstein's past relationship with the president, a sensitive issue that had already caused a rift within Trump's base.
Oh, okay.
These examples, from the perspective of critics, highlight concerns about the erosion of democratic norms and the potential weakening of congressional checks and balances.
So you have two very different views here. One side sees highly effective governance. The other sees an alarming consolidation of power in the executive branch.
Exactly. And it's important to see both sides of that argument.
It's clear that Johnson's path to power and his unique ability to navigate these complex, often treacherous political waters are deeply rooted in his personal history, his faith, and his innate political savvy. The article gives us a fascinating glimpse into a crucial high-stakes moment just before he pushed through that mega bill.
It does. Not long before that monumental vote on the one big, beautiful bill, Johnson actually feared it might all fall apart. Trump and Johnson had set a July 4th deadline for the bill to pass the House.
Tight deadline.
Very. In the early hours of July 3rd, around 2 a.m., Johnson was still 9 votes shy of passing a rule, a critical procedural vote needed to set the terms for the bill's consideration.
9 votes short at 2 a.m., that's kind of close.
Extremely close. And a key figure in this drama was Representative Thomas Massey of Kentucky. The article describes him as a perpetual thorn in the side of GOP leadership.
Oh, Massey. Yeah. Known for his independent, often contrarian votes.
Yeah.
Usually considered unwhippable, right? Hard to bring into line.
Exactly. But Massey was willing to deal this time, and the article suggests it was deeply personal.
How so?
Massey told Johnson that Trump's super PAC attack ads running against him in his own district were devastating, directly threatening his political survival.
Ah, so it was leverage. Pure leverage.
Seems like it. The compromise was struck. Massey would vote for the crucial rules package, and in return, Trump would stop the ads against him.
Wow. Massey's office didn't comment.
Nope. Did not respond for comment. But this anecdote truly reveals the highly personalized and often transactional nature of modern congressional deal-making, especially within the Republican Party.
And the immense, almost unparalleled leverage Trump holds over his party members.
Mm.
It's not just about policy positions. It's about political survival and the very real threat of being targeted by the party's de facto leader.
And this is where Johnson's profound personal faith comes into play, providing a crucial lens through which to understand his actions, maybe his resilience.
Mm-hmm.
Hours earlier, amidst that legislative deadlock, he had prayed for a breakthrough in the Capitol Chapel with his wife. The article details how religion has been a cornerstone of his life since childhood, shaping his worldview and his approach to public service. He was, in fact, the product of an unplanned pregnancy. Yeah, his parents, high school sweethearts raised Catholic, courageously rejected advice to have an abortion. Then a truly pivotal moment occurred when Johnson was just 12. His father, Pat Johnson, a firefighter, suffered severe burns in an anhydrous ammonia leak explosion. A horrific accident that left him with only a 5% chance of survival.
Oh, my goodness.
Mike prayed intensely for his father's life, and remarkably, after dozens of surgeries, his father miraculously recovered. As Johnson himself states, God kind of miraculously saved his life. And from that moment, faith became a very real thing to me.
That's incredibly powerful. It certainly provides crucial context for his deeply held beliefs and how they inform his political approach. You can see how it might shape his moral framework, his resilience, maybe even his tenacity in the face of daunting odds.
Definitely. So his faith shaped him deeply, and then he began his political journey. He was the first in his family to attend college, went on to LSU Law School, became a constitutional lawyer.
Right, focusing heavily on religious liberty cases and causes connected to the Christian right. like defending that 2004 Louisiana constitutional amendment defining marriage as between a man and a woman. A huge cultural battleground then.
And he entered politics almost by chance, running unopposed for Louisiana's state representative in 2015. Pretty unusual.
Very unusual. Then, urged by Congressman John Fleming to run for U.S. Congress in 2016, a race where he remarkably emerged victorious from a field of seven opponents.
And he entered Congress in January 2017, the very same month Trump took office. It's almost like their political destinies were intertwined from the start.
It's quite a coincidence, isn't it?
It is. And the article highlights an early interaction with Trump that proved incredibly prophetic in foreshadowing their future partnership.
What was that?
April 2017, just months into his first term as a freshman congressman. Johnson gets a call directly from then President Trump. Trump, in his typical demanding style, demands Johnson vote yes on repealing the Affordable Care Act. But Johnson, despite Trump cutting him off mid-sentence, refused.
A freshman refused Trump.
He did. He had told then-Speaker Paul Ryan he couldn't support the bill due to projected 30% health care cost increases in his district. It would have devastated his constituents. He stood his ground, said he wouldn't vote yes until his amendments were added.
And how did Trump react?
What's so fascinating is that, far from starting a feud, Johnson believes Trump actually respected that I had that resolve. He thinks it laid crucial groundwork for their future partnership.
Wow. So standing up to him actually earned respect.
Apparently so. It shows an early instance of Johnson's surprising resolve and his ability to stand his ground, earning surprisingly Trump's respect rather than his wrath. It suggests Johnson learned early on how to navigate the Trump dynamic effectively.
He certainly did, and he quickly began to rise through the ranks, capitalizing on his legal background. Secured a spot on the powerful House Judiciary Committee, a crucial platform, then served on Trump's legal defense team for both impeachments, 2019 and 2020. Showed loyalty, legal acumen.
Right. And notably, he also voted to overturn the 2020 election results, which solidified his alignment with Trump's most fervent base.
He chaired the Republican Study Committee, a powerful group of House conservatives, became vice chair of the Republican Conference.
So he was building influence within the party structure.
Exactly. Yet, despite these significant achievements, he was still relatively unknown to the broader public until Florida Representative Matt Gaetz orchestrated that dramatic ouster of Speaker Kevin McCarthy in October 2023.
And this is truly where the unexpected twist occurs, where Johnson's unique qualities perhaps became indispensable.
Right. After McCarthy's unprecedented ouster, the House plunged into chaos. 3 weeks without a speaker. Just intense disarray.
And prominent figures, Scalise, Jordan, Emmer, they all failed one after another to secure enough votes from their own party.
It was a mess.
A complete mess. Johnson, in contrast, emerged as what the article calls an unlikely unity candidate, a low-profile figure with surprisingly few enemies in a deeply fractured conference.
How did he manage that?
He managed to win in an internal GOP caucus poll, a crucial first step, and then the speakership itself on the fourth round of voting, a testament to his ability to bridge divides, it seems.
So he became one of the least tenured members to hold the job, suddenly third in line to the presidency.
Exactly. This detailed chronological account reveals Johnson's strategic patience, his legal grounding, and the unique circumstances that propelled him into one of the most powerful positions in American politics.
It underscores his consistent alignment with conservative and Trumpian forces, even early on, but also his distinct ability to bridge divides within his own party where others simply could not.
It's like he was uniquely suited for that particular moment of chaos and instability. Johnson himself famously described becoming speaker as like being elected mayor of a town that had been hit by a nuclear bomb.
That's quite an image. And yet he immediately faced and successfully navigated immense challenges that had crippled his predecessors.
Precisely. Right out of the gate, he successfully passed a critical aid package to Israel and Ukraine. A deeply contentious issue he managed to move forward, despite significant internal party objections, by strategically teaming with Democrats, a move that could have easily alienated his base, but somehow didn't. He also effectively pacified the obstinate group that had ousted McCarthy just months prior, a crucial achievement for maintaining stability.
So he managed the firebrands.
Apparently so. John Boehner, who knows the House GOP well from his own tumultuous speakership, offers a key insight. He says, his temperament has served him well. He's a patient guy. He listens and members trust him. That is the essential ingredient to being a successful speaker.
Patience and trust.
Boehner even describes him as a very affable guy, despite not drinking, smoking, or cussing. Representative Andy Ogles, Johnson's former roommate, adds that Johnson is hands-on, takes criticism, notes, seeks solutions, and apparently can even diffuse tension with a good Trump impression.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
Wouldn't we all? These observations highlight Johnson's specific leadership qualities. Patience, listening, calm demeanor, adaptability that allowed him to succeed where others faltered, especially in such a volatile environment.
It sounds like he's almost a political chameleon, able to adapt while retaining his core principles. And this adaptability, combined with this strategic foresight, really played out in his detailed planning with Trump.
Absolutely. The article reveals a critical meeting in February 2024. Johnson travels to Mar-a-Lago to meet with Trump and his top advisors.
What was the goal?
Their objective was ambitious: devise a clear playbook for advancing Trump's goals through Congress if he won the election. The key strategy: package Trump's entire agenda into reconciliation bills.
Reconciliation, the budget tool.
Exactly. For listeners, these are powerful legislative tools that crucially only require a simple majority to pass in the Senate, completely bypassing the 60-vote filibuster threshold.
It's a strategic sledgehammer for a unified government. Allows major policy changes with less bipartisan support.
And this wasn't a rushed plan. Johnson and his aides spend months working on the intricate details. Johnson himself confirmed this, stating, "We planned this very carefully over that long period."
And the planning continued right up to the new administration's launch. New Year's Day 2025, Johnson joins allies and advisors at Trump's Palm Beach mansion. Trump was clearly eager for rapid action on his core promises, making the 2017 tax cuts permanent, finishing the border wall, deporting millions of migrants.
But there was a debate about structure.
Right. Interestingly, Trump's inner circle, Susie Wiles, Stephen Miller, J.D. Vance, along with Senate leaders like John Thune and Lindsey Graham, they all favored breaking up this sweeping agenda into two or three separate bills. They thought it would be easier to pass incrementally.
But Johnson argued the opposite. He told Trump directly, with conviction, if we break it up, we will do parts of it and the other parts will never get done.
He understood the risk of cherry picking.
Exactly. Leaving the more controversial pieces behind. In a pivotal decision, demonstrating Johnson's strategic influence, Trump sided with Johnson. He wanted the one big beautiful bill passed in the House by Memorial Day.
So Johnson won that argument. It really showcases his strategic influence over Trump's legislative approach and his commitment to comprehensive rather than piecemeal achievements.
It reflects a deep understanding of congressional maneuvering and how to advise a president with ambitious goals. And they then moved quickly, clearing procedural hurdles, funding the government in March, passing a budget framework in April to advance reconciliation.
But despite this meticulous planning, getting the mega bill through wasn't easy. Even with Johnson's strategic acumen, it faced obstacles, even from within the GOP.
Like the moderates.
Right. To win over moderate Republicans, Johnson and his team agreed to raise the cap on the federal deduction for state and local taxes SALT to $40,000 a year. A key issue for Republicans in high-tax states, a concession to build a broader coalition.
That makes sense. But blue state Republicans weren't the only impediment, were they?
Not at all. The bill also faced significant resistance from various other GOP factions. You had deficit hawks worried about the debt, economic populists worried about its impact on everyday Americans, especially the working class.
And the CBO report fueled those concerns.
Absolutely. The CBO report stating the bill would add $3.4 trillion to the deficit, offsetting only a fraction through cuts to Medicaid, food benefits, clean energy. That made it harder for fiscally conservative Republicans. Even Stephen Bannon noted the political challenge, observing that there's a lot of MAGA on Medicaid, highlighting potential backlash even from Trump's core base.
And then there was the ultimate wild card, Elon Musk.
Ah, yes, the Musk factor. In a truly bizarre twist, Johnson mentioned collaborating with Musk on parts of the legislation during Musk's brief, self-proclaimed tenure running his Department of Government Efficiency.
Which sounds very Musk-like.
Doesn't it? But then, early June, things got volatile. Musk calls Johnson, concerned about electric vehicle tax credits being eliminated. This is fascinating. It reveals these complex, unpredictable influences beyond traditional political figures.
Right. Johnson recalled telling Musk, "Elon, it's a little late. We've already passed the bill out of the House, and I was under the impression that you had fully endorsed all this."
Ouch. How did Musk take that?
Well, the drama didn't end there. Musk then called the president directly. Sources said the call did not go well. The very next day, Musk unleashes a public tirade against the president on social media, a very public rift. Johnson was actually in the Oval Office when this happened and tried, unsuccessfully, to dissuade Trump from responding and escalating the spat.
So Johnson was playing mediator even then.
Trying to. With Musk threatening to fund primary challenges against Republicans who voted for the bill, the legislation's fate initially hung in the balance. Johnson admitted it complicated things initially.
It just highlights Johnson's ability to navigate these unexpected challenges, even from powerful figures outside the political establishment. He's acting as a key buffer for Trump.
Despite these hurdles, Johnson pushed forward relentlessly. While many Republicans privately shared Musk's concerns about the bill or its fiscal impact, few were willing to publicly cross Trump. They knew the political risk.
The fear factor.
Definitely. After the Senate made some tweaks, Johnson rushed it back to the House floor, understanding delay would make passage impossible. He and Trump's aides then began intensely working the holdouts. A group led by Representative Andy Harris, chair of the right-wing House Freedom Caucus.
Always a tough group to manage.
Exactly. The article makes it clear these talks were no longer about the bill's specifics, but about what members could extract in exchange for their support. Commitments for future cost-cutting orders, future debt reduction bills. It became highly transactional.
Pure horse trading.
By midnight on July 2nd, deadline looming, still deadlocked. This is when Johnson made that significant high-stakes gamble. Scheduling the procedural vote on the rule before he had the numbers.
That's real hardball.
It is. A tactic he'd used successfully before on Trump's budget resolution, Ukraine aid. Designed, in his words, to put holdouts in a pressure cooker, forcing them to face the immediate threat of Trump's ire and public fallout.
As Princeton scholar Francis Lee notes, Johnson uses Trump's popularity and his own procedural authority to really put the screws to them, leveraging the full weight of the president's influence.
And the Massey deal, that final piece, fell into place. At 3.23 a.m., amidst palpable tension, the vote finally passed, effectively assuring the bill would reach the president's desk.
And the relief, as you said, was palpable. Representative Rick Allen of Georgia, overcome with emotion, lifting Johnson in a bear hug in the speaker's lobby, crying, "Only you can do this job."
Such a powerful image, isn't it? After months of relentless pressure, that moment solidified Johnson's position as indispensable.
After 14 months of meticulous planning, Johnson had delivered Trump his one big, beautiful bill. And when Trump signed it on July 4th, Johnson gave him his speaker's gavel as a memento.
This detailed narrative is critical. It showcases Johnson's strategic brilliance, his mastery of procedure, his willingness to use aggressive tactics. It truly underscores that profound shift in the speaker-president relationship, an unprecedented level of alignment and legislative power.
And this dynamic, this ability to deliver, didn't stop there, did it?
Not at all. Just 2 weeks later, mid-July, Johnson delivered more wins for Trump. A $9 billion rescissions bill gutting foreign aid, public broadcasting, and crucially, the first ever comprehensive law regulating cryptocurrencies.
Another win for that tech bro constituency.
Exactly. A group instrumental in Trump's return to power.
And he even managed to quash a brewing rebellion from his right flank over the crypto bill, right? Some wanted more oversight. A Fed ban on digital currencies.
He did. He won them over by passing the first, more industry-friendly, bill and promising to include the second, more conservative measure in must-pass legislation later, all to give Trump something significant for crypto week at the White House.
So he continues to solidify his image. Highly effective, loyal, capable of delivering on diverse priorities and managing internal dissent.
So he's clearly been highly effective, but what does the future hold for Speaker Johnson and this new dynamic? The article points to significant battles still to come.
Like funding the government ahead of the September 30th deadline, always a contentious fight, and passing the National Defense Authorization Act.
And of course, the 2026 midterms, a major electoral test of whether voters reward or penalize Johnson's unwavering loyalty and this legislative agenda.
That's the absolutely crucial question looming over all of this. While many of the most controversial safety net cuts won't actually take effect until after the next election.
Strategic political timing, no doubt.
Oh, certainly. But some conservatives are deeply skeptical. They question whether the popularity of tax cuts can truly overcome the unpopularity of less money for Medicaid and potential economic disruption from tariffs.
And the fiscal concerns are huge.
Massive. Critics, especially fiscal conservatives, argue that by dramatically reducing revenue via tax cuts and increasing spending on things like the border wall, Trump's big, beautiful bill comes at a steep cost, both to the social contract and the nation's long-term economic health.
They warn about the debt, right? Interest payments exceeding defense spending.
Exactly. Stark warnings that eventually, interest on the debt will exceed national defense spending. taxpayer dollars consumed by past borrowing, not funding current needs. This really shifts the focus to long-term consequences and political risks.
Democrats, naturally, plan to run hard against this legislation in the midterms, making it central to their campaign.
But Francis Lee, the Princeton scholar cited, notes an interesting nuance. While surveys show most Americans disapprove of the bill overall, many individual components, tax breaks, border security, are actually quite popular.
So it's a mixed bag for voters. Johnson himself, though, believes it will ultimately help Republicans. He states confidently, "We're going to be talking about it. We can defend it."
It sets up a fascinating electoral test of how voters weigh these complex policy packages. And Johnson also anticipates, quite realistically, more challenges from his cantankerous colleagues in the House GOP.
Lingering cracks are already showing.
Yes. The article mentions Representative Massey continuing his attacks on both Johnson and Trump, accusing them of suppressing the Epstein files. Internal dissent remains. Trump's own recent comment at a White House meeting perfectly encapsulates Johnson's unique role. Trump remarked, "He's the only guy that could do this because he's a nice guy. I couldn't do this."
That's telling. A rare moment of self-awareness, perhaps. Trump couldn't tolerate the criticism, the insubordination. He couldn't take a punch without counterpunching.
Exactly. In stark contrast, Johnson is willing to absorb the opprobrium, mediate the meltdowns, and somehow hold together that fractured conference.
Mm.
He is, as the article aptly puts it, both a punching bag and a psychiatrist for House Republicans.
Republicans who face the unenviable choice, back the president's agenda, or potentially lose their jobs.
This final assessment emphasizes Johnson's unique ability to manage the turbulent politics of the modern GOP, positioning him as indispensable for Trump, but also subject to the extreme, relentless pressures of the role.
And as is always the case in high-stakes politics, Trump's favor has limits. Johnson understands he has the president's backing only as long as he remains loyal and productive.
Right. If the speaker stumbles, fails to deliver votes, stifle dissent, make the chaos work for Trump, he risks suffering the same fate as his predecessors.
Yeah.
Cast aside.
And even if Trump doesn't turn on him, voters may. A blue wave, or even just a ripple in the upcoming elections, could force him out, regardless of his current successes.
The article ends with a truly humanizing glimpse into the relentless demands of the job. A moment of quiet reflection from Johnson himself.
What was that?
Yes. On July 18th, Johnson was in his armored car on the way to the White House for the bill signing, reflecting on the spectacle. He reportedly said with a touch of weariness, "It's cool for about half a day." He then recalled a colleague asking him if he was proud that he had made history after the mega bill vote. A monumental achievement. Johnson simply laughed and said, "No, I'm so tired of making history."
Wow. That quote truly encapsulates the precarious nature of his position. That even apparent success is temporary, and the sheer weight and relentless demands of the job are immense, outweighing any sense of personal triumph.
It's a moment of surprising candidness, a window into the reality of that powerful office.
What we've unpacked today from Time Magazine, August 18th, 2025, is a truly fascinating portrait of power, pragmatism, and principle, all centered on Speaker Mike Johnson. We've seen how his unique blend of faith, strategic patience, and willingness to leverage Trump's influence has allowed him to deliver key legislative wins for the White House, fundamentally reshaping the dynamic between the executive and legislative branches in ways that are still unfolding.
Indeed. Johnson's journey from relative obscurity to a pivotal figure, leveraging both his personal faith and shrewd political strategy, it really reveals a new template for leadership in a highly polarized environment. And the implications of this are far-reaching, from the profound impact on the national debt and social programs to a potential long-term alteration of the traditional balance of power in Washington. It's a significant moment.
It really is. So, as you reflect on this deep dive, consider this provocative thought. How might Speaker Johnson's model of obedient leadership under a powerful president permanently alter the traditional checks and balances of American democracy? And what will be its lasting legacy on the role of Congress in a unified government? Thank you for joining us for this deep dive. Until next time, keep digging into the stories that shape our world.